big leagues are a big deal. This is Baseball Central with Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
All right, Barker, so I got this all figured out here. I got it all figured out.
Let's hear it.
We got 17 games left, right? So I figure the Jays win 10 of them. And they hang on to second place. Here's how I've got this worked out.
Okay.
They play the first of three tonight against the Mets. All right. I got them taking two of three against the Mets. Then they play the Yankees. I think they see Tanaka and Cole. So I'm going to go, just err on the safe side, I'm going to say that they take one of three against the Yankees. They got four against the Phillies. They'll split that easily. Then they got the Yankees. Four games. Split. Then they're going to sweep the Orioles. 10-7. There's a little bit of wiggle room there, obviously. They could very easily take two or three from that series against the Yankees, but I figure they can. I got them down for 10 wins the rest of the way. What do you have?
Well, that would make, you know, a lot of sense if some things start to happen, I think, a lot. And that would be bullpen stays hot the way it is. Ken Giles, when he comes back, is dominant. They're going to have that to give the bullpen a little bit of a break and have some experience at the back end. That'll help a lot. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is going to have to do something offensively. Randall Gritch is going to have to get hot again. And the $80 million man in the rotation is going to have to give them quality plus innings. That means six plus and sometimes occasionally a seven-inning start. He's got four more left. You know, he pitches tomorrow, and he's got three left after that. Three out of those four have to be super good. They have to be almost dominant. Can he do that? If he does that, I'm with you. I'll take 10 of those wins.
Well, there you go. I thought there'd be like some great, you know, argument here over this.
No. Well, the Jays are a good team. You know, and they're playing not such good teams. You know, the Mets are okay. Jacob deGrom's pitching. They're really good. When he's not, they're 14-22 on the season. I mean, you take your chances when he's not on the mound. The Phillies, the bullpen's not very good. They're almost atrocious. The Yankees, you know, you can split with them. You're going to get Cole and Tanaka. That's going to be tough games. You know, you're probably going to get one of the two big guys in their lineup back. They're going to be harder to pitch to. Baltimore, listen, they're free swingers. They don't know any better. But you're supposed to beat them if they do that. Why not?
The Jays will take on the Mets tonight, 6:37, first of a three-game series. Just to give you a rundown of how this is going to work, the Raptors, of course, are playing Game 7 of their series against the Boston Celtics. They're going to win that. Everybody sit back and relax. That game will be on 680 News. Tip-off is at 9, I believe, Eastern. Mm-hmm. And it will be joined in progress on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, immediately following the Jays game. And that was a big sneeze.
Bless you.
Thank you. So that's how it's going to work tonight. It'll be Jacob deGrom on the mound for the Mets, Chase Anderson on the mound for the Blue Jays. We should get an update on Bo Bichette. I believe Ross Atkins, the general manager of the Blue Jays, has immediate availability at sometime this afternoon. I think it was 3:15. Mm-hmm. So we'll probably get a better idea then when Bo Bichette will be back and probably when Ken Giles will be back. I think we certainly, Kevin, we expect both of them back in some form this weekend. I guess the only question is it Friday or is it Sunday? But we certainly expect to see both of them back this weekend. And Nate Pearson, I don't know, maybe Nate Pearson comes back early next week or the middle of the week.
Yeah, who do you think is more important, Bo Bichette or Ken Giles, to the Blue Jays down the stretch?
Oh, down the stretch? Mm-hmm. I think Bo Bichette. I think Bo Bichette, even though this team is one without him in the lineup, I have enough faith in Charlie Montoyo and Pete Walker and Matt Bushman that they'll be able to piece together a bullpen out of the remaining parts. But they need Bo Bichette in the lineup right now. They're just, you know, you can't. It's awfully hard for this team, given the way their offense is, to survive the loss of Telez and Hernandez both? It's not the longest lineup to begin with. It was a lineup where most of the damage was being done to the top of the middle. So you need Bo Bichette.
Yeah, I think Bo gives you certainty. You know what you're going to get, yes, from Bo. He's a threat. You know, consistently he'll give you an approach, two strikes. He's going to battle. That's all you can ask from a big leaguer. And that opposing pitcher has to worry about him a lot, which means they have to work really hard to get him out, which would make everybody else around him better. Just certainty throughout the lineup. Who do you know is going to give you a good game? Name a guy right now. Kevin Biggio, maybe, because of the way he attacks
at bats. Gurriel probably would be my second choice.
If he's in the lineup consistently, you know, they give so many days off here. Who knows if he gets to play enough? But I'm with you. You know, you consistently run out the same lineup for the next 17 games. Yeah, you're going to give everybody an opportunity to do well. But the Bo Bichette thing for me just brings fear. Sometimes, occasionally, you need to run some fear through a pitcher, and they have to worry about that guy. And Bo Bichette for me is the guy.
590-590 is the text line. We're going to spend the large portion of this particular show opening the text line to you, the listener. I was going to say the caller. You, the listener. Folks have asked, by the way, about a lack of calls. Part of the problem is because we're working remote, and we've got one guy in the studio, essentially. Andrew Holland is in for Derek Brandale. Lance Kennedy is there as well. These guys are like doing all types of stuff, and there's no way you can have a call screener there, somebody to screen the calls. So folks have been asking why you're doing text and not taking calls. It's just logistically hard right now. So hopefully once everybody's back in, you know, we'll be able to open the phone lines and talk to you in person. But for now, 590-590 is your only way to chat Blue Jays with Kevin Barker and myself. Did you have a chance, Kevin, to see Brady Singer last night?
I did not.
You did not. Okay, we'll scratch that question then. I was going to ask you who he reminded you of. And it was funny because watching MLB Network today, and they were breaking down the pitching. And with Mark DeRosa and John Smoltz on. And I watched two innings last night. I didn't see the no-hitter get broken up. I watched just the fourth and fifth inning.
Yeah.
If you look at him online, I don't know if you've got a computer handy right now. Does he look at all to you like Roy, like a young, and I'm not saying he's going to be Roy Halladay, but a young Roy Halladay? He's got humongous, I mean, he's got ginormous upper legs, and as Mark DeRosa said, he has got a pitcher's ass.
I have seen video of him before last night's start. I did watch online and see that the no-hitter was broken up in the eighth inning. You know, the hit the other way. The one thing that stood out to me a lot was body language. You know, it's hard
to
teach a guy.
Did he look like Doc to you? Did he look like Doc to you?
You know, he does a little bit. It's you know, the way the motions are on the mound, you know, the little compact wind up. He's a bigger guy. He's lanky like Doc was. So yeah, I'm with you a little bit of that. I don't know, stuff plays. You know, Doc was a power sinker guy, attacking the strike zone early, very efficient, getting the guys out quickly as possible. You know, I don't know if he's there yet with fastball command and the secondary pitches. But listen, you know, you can't listening to him talk. He's an exciting pitcher. I think he understands his body. He understands how to be a big leaguer in 2020. It's different being a big leaguer now than it was when I played. You know, that's a big deal with all the analytics and all the information. If you can separate the information for me, because you have talent, that'll make you a better big leaguer quicker. And, you know, he seems to be able to do that. It's for Kansas City, you got to be, the sky's the limit. You know, you got to be excited to have him at the top of a rotation, I would think, for certain.
What are you expecting tonight from Jacob DeGrom? And how did the Jays, like, we've talked a lot. The Jays, newsflash, the Jays have difficulty handling velocity. Well, they're going to see velocity tonight. Now, there's two things they can do. One, we can just look at it and go, they're sunk. They're not going to be able to do anything against velocity. That's the way it's going to be the rest of the year. How should the Jays go about, or can they, Kevin, go about adjusting that to have a little more success against velocity?
Yeah, I think you got to really work on the simplicity of your swing. Be as simple as possible. Get the foot down, you know, have as less movement as you can possibly have. You mentioned the velocity. It's 98.4 miles an hour. He's mastered three pitches, a slider, a changeup, and the four-seamer, where it's all quadrants of the strike zone. As much as I've watched him, I'm not real sure he pitches to a hitter's weakness as much as my stuff is so good. And I just talked about the body language. With his body language, it's really of when it comes off the fingers, that stuff is so good around the bottom of the plate that you have no chance of hitting it. I think a lot of that is that's what it is. You know, the bloop and the bomb, I don't think this is going to work against him. Putting together, stringing together three or four hits an inning, I don't think that is. But I will say this. I think if this is one time where you want to see them running all over the place on the bases, I'm not going to mind that tonight. You have to put pressure on a defense. You know, you got some young parts, you got some older parts with the Mets. Make them make plays. You know, you get a guy on first base, Louis Rivera's got to be real aggressive at third. You know, bring a guy to go first to third. Be very aggressive. Push the envelope. You do that against guys that are elite. Jacob DeGrom's elite. You know, you put pressure on him. You get him, if you can get him out of the stretch early, you know, hopefully he shows up in Buffalo and he don't like the mound. And that takes him an inning or so to get used to, you know, where his foot's landing and where he's standing on the rubber. And maybe he has to change a little bit of that. So if you can get him out of his routine just a little to, you know, to get a straight heater right down the middle, which he don't throw those, right? He's got three pitchers coming out of the same slot and it has late bite one way or the other. And if you can get him off a little bit early, maybe you can get an early lead and then you can turn it over to your bullpen, which is your strength. That's what you do. Grind it out. Force him to throw to your strength because he's going to attack what he does well. Again, I'm not sure he's attacking what you don't do well. I think it's more of my stuff is so good. So you have to force him. If you like the ball away, don't ever swing at the ball in. His stuff is that good. Make sure you get it away. And if you do that consistently, you're going to give yourself a better chance.
I'm gonna throw this out because it's something that I thought about when the Jays acquired Jonathan Villar. If Bo Bichette is back in the lineup, if you have Biggio, Villar, Bichette, and to a certain degree Randall Grichuk, if you are Charlie Montoyo, Kevin, do you turn them loose in the bases? I know nobody wins a game stealing bases anymore. I get all that. But you want to talk about putting pressure on a guy. There's only so many ways you can put pressure on a guy like Jacob DeGrom. First and foremost, you got to get on base. I understand that. But it seems to me this would be the game where if you've got that in your arsenal, you roll it out.
Yeah, to your point, 13.1 Ks per nine innings. You know, it's going to be almost impossible for you know, this team to get on base. Lineup-wise for the Blue Jays, they're not going to go up and have quality at bat after quality at bat, but they can force this guy into their strength, whatever their strength is. Every individual's different. You know, again, if you can't hit a ball in, why are you swinging at it? If you're Vladimir Guerrero Jr., why are you going to go up and look for a slider or a changeup when opponents are hitting under 200 against those two pitches? Why would you do that? Force it down. Vladdy likes it down and out over the plate. Look down out over the plate until you get two strikes, and then you choke up and try and do something different. I'm with you. If he occasionally will walk a guy, somebody gets on like a Kevin Biggio, turn him loose. You know, if he can steal second and third against this guy because he's not paying any attention to you, it makes that guy's job at the plate a little bit easier. Again, you're not going to get three or four hits an inning against this guy. You're not going to string that together. So if you get guys on, don't be afraid to be aggressive. Again, I just mentioned that one stat. 14-22 when he is not the starting pitcher. You'll take your chances tomorrow, but today, why not turn them loose? I'm with you.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if that's the case. And again, as we said, you do have to get on base first. But
yeah,
it wasn't talked about a great deal when the VR trade was made. But you know, I was thinking about it because the Blue Jays have been so, I don't know. I don't know if I've ever used the word inconsistent to describe a team in the base paths before, but they're capable of making some colossal base running mistakes. They've also won games this year where they've really pushed the issue on the base paths. And when they got VR, I was thinking I mean, I can't remember a team that I guess I'd go back to you know, and Shannon Stewart and Jose Cruz Jr. were here. I mean, those guys could steal some bases. Those guys were aggressive base runners.
Controlled aggression, Jeff. That's what you have to be. Understand the situation. Understand who's on the mound against you. If you're on first base and you can go first to third on when the right fielder's moving two steps when you normally wouldn't do it to put pressure on a guy to make that guy make that play because of who's on the mound, I say I'm all for it today.
Go to the text line, 590-590 is the text line. This is a just a general question on Hyunjin Ryu. And again, please put your name, attach your name to the text and where you're from as well. Question about Hyunjin Ryu. What are your thoughts on his performance this year, and is he worth the contract? Well, I mean, there's a couple of things. First of all, you know, is he worth the contract? I don't know if you can necessarily tell that based on this season. Hyunjin Ryu, to me, has to be... right now, he's your ace. There's no doubt about that. I think he's probably your ace until you see what you have with Nate Pearson. You can't judge a guy in his first, what, eight starts or however many starts he's had and whether or not he's worth the contract. I will say this, Kevin. To me, he has delivered exactly what I thought he'd deliver. The only thing I haven't seen from him is 7 2/3 or 8 innings. And that's whether that's him or whether that is analytics, I don't know. But I have been, I expected a longer outing from him. I expected the odd 7 or 8 inning outing.
Yeah, he's exactly what I expected him to be. You know, he's a left-hander with those 90 miles an hour. The way he has to work so hard to get through innings, I don't know if I expected that. I think I expected a little bit more elite command with the fastball. We haven't seen that for whatever reason. Maybe he's trying to overthrow it. Maybe he doesn't have the feel for something else. I know his sinker has not been working. He's a 5-pitch guy. Now he's a 4-pitch guy. That's maybe a hindrance to him with lefties. You know, he throws the lefty sinker to stand him up so he can get weak contact out away with the slow breaking ball. It's that kind of thing. You know, he's overused his changeup a lot for whatever reason. So it has been, you know, because of the shortened season, because of, you know, what he's went through to actually get himself on the field, these kind of things. I'm sure those things have to come and play. But, you know, listen, this rotation is much better than it was last year. And the bullpen is hiding a bunch of flaws that it has now in the rotation. But you can't argue the way the pitching staff's been. It's been really good. The pitching staff's the reason why they are 24-19 and up three and a half games behind the Tampa Bay Rays. I don't think we can argue that.
Chris from Orangeville wants to jump in here. Says he doesn't want to dump on Montoyo, and then he proceeds to dump on Montoyo.
Not really.
No, he does not. He said, but I've noticed he has some bullpen guys up and down, sometimes not even getting into games. Remember your conversation with the bullpen guy under Gibbons who praised the fact that if he got up to throw, he was getting in a game. Who was the player? It was B.J. Ryan who said in his first year with the Blue Jays that Gibbons got him up once and didn't get him in a game, and he gave me the date when it happened. And that was one thing guys liked about John Gibbons is generally, they called it dry humps, right? Generally, when Gibbons got you up, you were going in the game. This is a little different this year just because I think Charlie, first of all, when B.J. Ryan was here, there wasn't as much of an emphasis in analytics, and it was essentially John Gibbons' call and the bullpen coach's call as to when B.J. Ryan got up. That's different now. Charlie Montoyo, Kevin, we know this, has got a lot of people. He's got a lot of people in his ears when it comes to how guys are used. But I also think that it's such an odd year that I think you almost have to be prepared for anything. And when you're not getting 7 innings out of your starter or 6 2/3 out of your starter, I think it's understandable that, you know, almost every time you're going to have to have two guys up because they're not all bullpen pitchers are the same. Some guys need a clean inning. Some guys don't mind pitching with a guy in base. Now that you've got the three batter rule, I think you have to almost have somebody up all the time, don't you?
Yeah, B.J. Ryan's a closer. You know, it's easy to know when to get B.J. Ryan up. I mean, that's not hard. If you're winning the game, you get him loose. If you're not, you don't. I mean,
his point was when he was with the Orioles, he was up a lot where they were, you know, we're going to go for 2 innings or we're going to go an inning and 2/3. Oh, then we sit you down, then we bring you up. That was his point.
The bullpen this year has a lot of hybrids in it, guys that can pitch anywhere from the fourth inning on. You know, you got the Hatches. I've seen Hatch up before because, again, it's if that one pitcher can't finish the inning, you're going to bring Hatch in, and then he can pitch the complete next inning. It's that kind of thing. And when that doesn't happen, then you have to get somebody else, like Stripling got up because they got through that inning, and then the Stripling has to have a clean inning, so you sit Hatch down. Look, they do the best they can because of the rotation they have. If the rotation was great, then you wouldn't be getting all these guys up having to protect them. It is what it is. The season is what it is. These guys in the bullpen are so young, they don't know any better. You know, they're just happy to be in the big leagues. They try and with the guys that are injured, like Baruchy, it's rare, if ever, that you've seen Baruchy up, dry hump, sit down again. Have you seen that, Jeff? I can't remember that I've seen Baruchy do that. I've seen Hatch do it. I've seen Yamaguchi do it. I've seen Sean Reed Foley do it once. The other guys, the older guys, like a Bass, I haven't seen him get up before. DeLeese, I haven't really seen him get up before. A.J. Cole, I might have seen him get up one time or the other. But, again, it's all about who that guy's pitching now and where you want that guy to come in. And I'm with you. It's about analytics. It's about matchups and lineups. And all of these pitches matter so much. They're trying to get the exact right guy in the game at the exact right time. Occasionally, you're going to mess that up. They're not perfect. So, you know, sometimes I think you got to back off a little bit, give them a little lenience. And again, how do you argue the Blue Jays are 24-19? They're in second place in the American League East. How do you argue?
Well, you have to argue because that's what people do.
I guess they're never happy. I guess it's that kind of thing in 2020, right?
It is. Well, it's you're right. And again, the game is so different right now. The season is so different that I really do believe if you're a manager, you know, you've got to be prepared. You've got to be prepared for anything. And the other thing here is if you look at Charlie Montoyo, hell, he's got so many bullpen arms. Like I said, essentially, if Charlie Montoyo wanted to, he could have two different bullpens on consecutive days. He could say, I'm going with these four on Monday. I'm going with these four on Tuesday.
I guess.
I'm going with the other four on Wednesday. I'm going the other four on Thursday.
What if Ross Stripling has a bad two innings and then you have to use somebody else again? We've had this conversation. That's going to mess up the little bit of a rotation. It's like tonight, for an example. Chase Anderson, third time through the order. Batters are hitting 429, slugging 715 with an OPS of over 1,200. Do you really think he's going to face the lineup three times? Not a chance, no matter how good he is. So you may see three guys up in the bullpen at the same time. So, again, they have 17 games left. They are trying with their utmost importance to finish in that second-place spot. It bodes them well to do that. Their lineup right now is not great because of who's not in it. Their rotation's not great once you get past the Ryu and the Walker. The other three guys, you know, when the Rays and the Stripling and the Anderson and the Roark, when they're in the game, it's chaos. You do the best you can do.
That's very well said. 595. 595-590 is the text line. We got a few more questions for Bark. We may even have a surprise guest coming on.
Yes.
We may have a surprise guest. I'm just throwing that out there. Just because I want to watch Kevin squirm. It's
Baseball
Central.
Better not be
Central.
My parents.
It's not your parents. Baseball Central at Sportsnet 590, the Fan.
Now, back to more Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, the Fan.
All right, so we will have Blue Jays baseball tonight, 6:37, first pitch from lovely Salem Field in Buffalo, New York, as the Blue Jays take on the New York Mets. Jacob DeGrom, Chase Anderson, the first of a three-game series. As I mentioned, 6:37, first pitch on Sportsnet 590, the Fan. The Raptors game will be on 680 News. Tip-off is 9 o'clock. We will switch over to the Raptors game at the conclusion of the Blue Jays-Mets game. Again, 6:37 first pitch for the Blue Jays and Mets tonight. Well, I promised that we would bring on a surprise guest for Kevin Barker. Barker's shaking his head. Because the last time we did this, I think it was a little embarrassing, wasn't it, the last time we did this? So we're going to bring our mystery guest in. I don't know if we have mystery guest music, but we're going to put our mystery guest on and ask him, the mystery guest, to say hello to Kevin Barker. Well, go ahead, mystery guest.
I wish we had some walk-up music for me. That'd be great. What's up, my little buddy? How are you?
Who is this? I really don't know who this is.
You're going to break my heart if you don't know who this is. Because if I was there...
We lost
Come on,
him,
baby.
Matt. There you go.
What's his voice sound like?
Ooh. Ooh. That's a great question. Don't leave me hanging. Tell me who it is.
I'll give you a clue. You ready?
Yeah.
I introduced you to your wife.
Well, that would have been John Gibbons, but so I know this is not. I know that this is not Gibby.
You must remember wrong. It's Towers, buddy. How are you?
Hey, JT, what's up, buddy? listen to for. I have not talked to JT. How long has it been, JT? It's been forever since I've talked to him. So, you know, give me, don't be too hard on me for not knowing what you sound like. It's been forever. You know, you've grown a little bit. Your voice has gotten deeper now, you know? You're so much more manly now. Oh, my God.
Don't even know how either. Don't even know how. Oh, man. I miss you, dude. How you been?
Hey, living a dream with Jeff Blair. How's it going with you?
Yeah, it's good, man. Just out here in Vegas doing my thing, trying to work, chasing kids. My son's a senior in high school playing in some baseball tournament right now in Georgia.
Oh, man, we dropped the line.
We lost
it. We'll have to get him back. Yeah, it's Josh Towers.
That's pretty awesome.
And if people
I haven't
don't
talked
know,
to him. Yeah, he was my roommate ahead. The first time. Well, when I got called up for the Blue Jays, he was my roommate here in Toronto. I lived with him, you know, because everything's expensive in Toronto. Me was expensive, so you know he allowed me to stay in one of his rooms in his big fancy house because you know he was making all the money, and so I mooched off him for about 2 months, and we've been friends. You know, I want to say we've been friends ever since, but since I don't know what he sounds like, people would tend to not believe that.
Josh Towers joining us. Yeah, there we are. Josh Towers is back with us. Josh is a pitching coach now in the Mets organization, so it's fitting that we get him on with the Mets taking on the Jays. You know, look, this is a different season because of the pandemic, and because of some of the things that are going on or not going on in the minor leagues, Josh. But look, I did want to ask you. I'm sure you've had some exposure to Jacob DeGrom. Spring training or just around. Can you just tell us a little bit about Jacob DeGrom and what makes him special? Obviously, this stuff is off the charts, but anytime a guy is that good, it's got to be probably more than just stuff, right?
Yes. Jacob is fantastic. I mean, I'm with the Mets now, but I was also with the Mets back in 2013. I want to say Jacob might have been around Double A at the time, or A ball, I'm not 100%. But I remember in spring training, you know, whether it would be in the pen, getting somebody ready for a game or whatever the case may be. And every time you turned around, you would see Jacob right there. And it always stuck out to me because he was always, you can tell that this young man was always looking for information. He was always trying, like other guys are trying to avoid doing charge or chasing foul balls or whatever the case may be. And Jacob was always trying to like, just listen in and see what he can pick up and how can it, you know, help him. And it was always impressive. And so stealing that extra bit of knowledge at any opportunity you can, I think that's a huge separation in players. And Jacob was always doing that. Not to mention he's from, and some of these guys, there's a few of them through minor league, or sorry, professional baseball, major league baseball. But he came from the Ron Romanek pitching coordinator era, where Ron was, your throwing programs were very specific. We had a cone set up so you knew exactly your distances and what you're doing that day. But the most important part is on your way in, you had to stop at 80 feet and shuffle changeups. And I don't know how many people listening have actually done that, but when you do that on a daily basis, it makes your changeup and your fastball so much better because you're using your legs always. You're finishing the pitch. You're not slowing down or picking up or getting side to side and twisting. You're actually staying through it, and your elbow and shoulder are staying in the right positions, and you're throwing this thing at 80-ish feet. And by default, it gets better. Like, the finish gets better. And so what does changeup do? The way you pronate, pronates the same way your fastball does. And so your fastball gets better. And that, like, start to his career of learning a throwing program based around your changeup, I think really benefited him and some others. And then he has a gift, which, you know, you kind of got to have that as well. But what does he do? I mean, Barth, you guys watch him. Like, watch him tonight. What does he do very well? He locates. He's not afraid of contact, but his stuff is plus, and it gets better and better. I mean, he's topping a 101 these days. Who does this through the course of a game? And when he misses, it's kind of like Tom Glavin style, where, like, he owns down and away, and he misses within inches. You know, you start missing within feet, you just don't have control, and you're trying to do too much. He misses within inches. So as a hitter, you know this, dude. You don't want to fight. Like, you're tired of falling behind 0-1. You're tired of falling behind 0-2. So then you start swinging early, and then that allows him to throw the breaking ball, which starts just like the fastball and breaks off, or the changeup, and now I get you out in front. And then he pops in when you start to cheat on him. And so now you got to respect both sides and four pitches. And yet he's like Roy Halladay as well, where you're plus stuff, but you're always throwing strikes and you don't walk anybody. It's like it sounds so simple, but you got to have the gift. But then you also have to have, I guess, the patience mentally to want to do it, because we get so caught up in wanting to throw as hard as we can and strike everybody out, which is a very bad thing. It's a negative thing. And he doesn't do that. And the best I think you can hope for when you're facing Jacob at times is he either makes a mistake or you foul a couple pitches off and you get to see a couple extra pitches and you're happy about it. I mean, it's just fascinating to watch. And it really is. He simplifies the process, but he simplifies the process because of the importance of the work he puts in when no one's looking.
Okay, JT, explain to me why the Mets are not any good. The Mets are 20-24. You just mentioned they have the best pitcher on the planet. They have Conforto. He is going to be a top 10 finisher in the MVP race. They have Dominic Smith, who's hitting almost 330. They have Pete Alonso, who's hit five homers in eight games in September. Explain to me why the Mets can't win any games.
I don't know. I mean, this team, I love this team. I love this roster. You said it. You got second-year guy in Pete Alonso, who took the world by storm last year. You didn't even mention Jeff McNeil, who's fantastic. I think he's from that 2013 draft as well. Mm-hmm. I love Conforto, too, man. This dude came out of, I think, Oregon. I remember him in college raking. They got it. And then they have the old school dudes, my old teammate, Robinson Cano, and some good pitching. It's tough. I think, honestly, the best answer I can give you is Major League Baseball. These are pretty good players who don't like to lose on every team. I mean, look at the Toronto Blue Jays. I don't know, maybe you guys, because, you know, you're homers, but did anybody expect them to be in second place right now? Or did people think it's another year or two on that development? So it's tough. I mean, sometimes it's strength of schedule. You're just battling consistency and getting along with your teammates. We got some great names and we got some great talent in that Major League roster, and you guys are going to see it tonight. So it's a tough question for me to answer, but I know that the Mets are happy about what they got, and I know that bright things are in the future, because, you know, anytime you can start to base a lineup around a Jacob DeGrom, and then you get to add these young studs that we just talked about offensively, it's a good place, man. But it's Major League Baseball, brother. You know that.
Yeah, JT, what do you think Jacob DeGrom's mindset will be like when he's pitching tonight in a minor league ballpark? It'd be different, right?
I think about that a lot. Like, for me and you, at least for me, I mean, I love pitching. I pitched so much in Syracuse and Buffalo and Rochester that feels like a second home. So I like pitching in Buffalo. I mean, shoot, I got vivid memories of, like, one of my most recent games there. So I don't mind it. But I think this year is just one of those years where you just adapt to what has happened and you don't worry about anything like that. I mean, you work so hard to get to the major leagues. And by doing so, you want to reap the perks of all the good things. And I would rather be in Toronto pitching in that stadium with those awesome fans and that great city than I would in Buffalo, New York. There's no question about it. But it is what it is, man. You just adapt. When it comes to doing our job out there, you tune off all the other stuff anyways. And you just try to locate and challenge that hitter, and you have that one pitch game or that one inning game that you're trying to accomplish. However you're trying to minimize the game itself. So I don't think that you worry about it. It looks like Buffalo did a pretty good job of turning that stadium around into something that major league guys can appreciate. So, is what it is, man. I think on any other year, if it wasn't for this pandemic, this nonsense with COVID-19, I think that they would be upset. But I think that with bigger issues out there, they're just appreciative that they can go play and give something back to the fans.
Yeah.
In conversation with Mets minor league pitching coach Josh Towers, you, Josh, had a chance to work with Simeon Woods Richardson, who, of course, was acquired by the Jays in the Marcus Stroman deal. Tell us a little bit, because we saw him a little bit during the, whatever it was, summer camp, whatever it was called, saw him a little bit. We've spoken to him a couple of times. Mm-hmm. But tell us a little bit about Simeon Woods Richardson.
I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, but I think I cried the day we traded him. And I hadn't been around the organization long enough, but former Jay as well and Mets pitching coach Jeremy Accardo, when they hired me, the first thing he said is, you're going to love this kid. And he was 100% right. You know, he reminds me, Bark, a lot of Travis Snyder by how he grew up. He had to grow up a little bit too fast, and he became a man younger than he should have, you know, raising some people. And it shows, like, you have a conversation with them and you start listening closely and you realize that, yeah, he is a teenage kid. And then on the other hand, you go, man, this dude has grown up and wise amongst his years. He has some of the best stuff I have ever seen. Four pitches, and one of them, man, is curveball. He wasn't even allowed to throw last year, and we slowly got to incorporate it. And like, I was just in shock when I saw it. I was like, wait a minute, you got that slider? You got probably the best changeup I've ever seen. Your fastballs are elite, and then you're like, you're just putting that curveball in your back pocket. Like, what are we talking about here? So then we start working on that, and he's always got a smile on his face, like the nicest kid. He wants to learn, loves to compete, and he's not like arrogant in any way to like where he's too good to do something. He's like, you would never catch anything negative from a kid who's drafted that high, who has that good of stuff. Like, I'm telling you guys, man. Jeff, Kev, I can talk all day about this kid because he is that special of a talent. And when he gets to Toronto, you guys and all the fans in Toronto are going to see what I'm talking about and realize why it's somebody that the Jays focused on with Anthony Kay in that trade, because he is that good. Ironically, too, he became friends with my son. They still talk every week, and Simeon, like, he FaceTimes me at least once a week, maybe once every 2 weeks, and we chop it up about something, whether it's just, you know, being friends or him trying to still learn the game. He had asked me about everybody in Toronto when he got there. Like, man, I got nothing but good things to say. You guys got a special one there.
Josh, it was great of you to do this, man. Really good to hear your voice again. And, you know, best of luck to you and your son. Hope it goes well for him. Hope everything goes well for you, and we'll be chatting again.
Yeah, I miss you. It's good talking to you, man.
I appreciate it. Bart, I miss you too. Tell everybody on your end I said hello, please.
I will. Be safe.
Sir.
Talk to you soon.
All right, buddy. Y'all too. Yes, sir.
Take care. Josh Towers. Josh Towers was maybe one of the great lines in Blue Jays history. When he had the line about David Ortiz, and it was after a game, something happened. He pitched to David Ortiz. I can't remember the whole story, but basically his line was, "If David Ortiz isn't Superman, if he was Superman, he'd play a position or something like that." Such a great line that I can't remember it, but that was basically the gist of it, and it was great because we got, like, you know, 2 days worth of, I mean, the Boston writers just, yeah, that was like red meat. Man, I'll tell you, Josh battled, eh? Like,
he had to
some great, you know, stuff, but he. Well, some good stuff, but he
bad. Well, yeah, I don't know. Great's a stiff word. You know, he located some things. He would pitch ahead. He had a pretty good changeup. You know, he was a little bit of ahead of his time because he could pitch up. You know, that was the thing
That's
when I played with him. He could pitch up. He would go up and into some guys. That was his kind of thing. You know, he gave up a few too many home runs. I think that's what ran him out of the game. But, listen, he competed. He made some money, which is the ultimate thing. You know, you work to make money. He did that. Now it sounds like he's found his passion in being a pitching coach, which is kind of cool.
Well, it's always good when you can make some money in the game and stay in the game teaching. And, boy, I'll tell you what, he's got me a little excited about Simeon Woods Richardson
too.
Right now.
He said the curveball's a hidden gem, and he doesn't throw it enough. What if you have four plus pitches? What?
At a young age?
Oof. You kidding me? Yeah,
you might be able to pitch 4 2/3 innings. Well, might even be able to go through the third faces the order third time through.
Now you're pushing it.
Want to thank Josh Towers for joining.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah,
that was pretty cool. Yeah.
You know, I realize it's awfully hard to pick somebody out strictly on voice. I should have had him give you a hint, but yeah. Knowing a little bit about you guys when you lived together, I was a little afraid where that might go.
Yeah, we were young for sure.
And I think AJ Burnett was part of the three-headed monster, was he not?
He was too. Yes.
That's all I need to say. Yes. I'm going to take a break because I'm going to get in trouble. We'll be back with more Baseball Central at Sportsnet 590. The Fan. All right. Well, that was a lot of fun. Want to thank Josh Towers for joining us. I mentioned that I had a chance to chat with him and Jeremy Accardo, who was in the Mets organization. They were in Las Vegas at the winter meetings. I think it was 2 years ago. And we cooked this up then, and we said, Hazel was involved. And I don't know if Hazel was there. I know she was at the winter meetings that year, but the three of us were having a beer, and Towers said, you know, it'd be good. Get me on your show, but don't tell Barker who it is.
Yep.
You know. So it took me 2 years. I'm old. I move slowly to pull that off. But like I said, I'm psyched about Simeon Woods Richardson now.
I'm too.
I'm ready to go.
Well, I'm not so psyched about the lineup facing Jacob DeGrom after that conversation we just had. But yeah. The Simeon, yeah, if he can throw a breaking ball the way Josh says he can, maybe they're onto something.
Can I ask you something right now as a hitter? And I've got a great question off the text line. I'm going to get to it. And God, it's 2:50. I really want to get to this question. My great question I was going to ask you, I'm going to ask you it on Monday, because Stephen Halifax sent in a question. It's a good baseball question, and it's a good question to ask a hitter. Describe the difference in your hitting approach as a hitter against a fastball compared to a breaking ball. So
okay,
will you describe the difference in the hitting approach you had against a fastball against a breaking ball? Does your swing change?
It does not. Not for me. I had one approach. I tried to get in an athletic position to always hit the fastball. If I thought between my ears that I was good enough with my body and my timing and my rhythm and I could use my hands the way I could when I was going well, that if I got my foot down on time to hit the velo, then that would allow me to see the breaking ball longer. If I'm on time to see the fastball, then I got that little split second later to see that breaking ball breaking, and I can get it elevated. And when I get it elevated, that thing's easy to hit the bottom part of it, get some backspin, and hit that ball the other way for a home run. That was my thinking. It's just backwards now. You look at the lineups now, especially the Blue Jays, they think backwards all the time. That's why you see most of the time they're late. And then one guy that comes to mind is Vladdy. Everybody's yelling and screaming, why can't he hit a heater? Why can't he hit velo? Well, I don't think it's because he can't. It's because he just is not always on time to hit it. Timing and rhythm is baseball. Name a position you're playing, and it is always about timing and rhythm. And if you're on time with your lower half, it's going to give you a better chance and an opportunity to recognize and actually put a good swing on what you're swinging at. How was that? That explain it?
That did explain it. And more to the point, it explained it with enough time for me to squeeze in this question. I was going to. You're designing, if I had you design a pitcher, every pitcher needs a fastball, obviously.
Yeah.
Curve, change, slider. Which of those are you picking? Which has to be the best secondary pitch out of that bunch?
Change up. Okay. Because it looks exactly like the fastball. It's just slower. Okay. And it may have a little – well, some have runs, some has depth to them. The good ones, like you're going to see the one tonight, that is nasty. It's 91 miles an hour, but his fastball is almost 99 miles an hour. There's that much difference, like I said, that people have to gear up for it, and then there's that much difference – gets weak contact, takes the sting out of a bat. A hitter can't judge what it is. It doesn't look any different. Oh, I'm out in front because it looks like a fastball. The slider, sometimes all of them are not that good, right? You can see one has a flop to it. One doesn't break as much, doesn't have as much depth to it, and I can time that up a little bit better, and I can lay off it. I don't want to swing at a lot of sliders. Breaking ball, Clayton Kershaw. I've yelled and screamed, throw more of those. This year he's throwing more of them. Oh, by the way, he's having one of the best years he's ever had. The breaking ball, that coming out of the hand looks the same. It has that big 12-6 break to it. Most people don't swing at it. And when they do swing at it, because they don't see a lot of them that look like that, they swing over them. So, me, it's the changeup, and then it's whatever they can throw maximum with something that spins, whether it's slider, whether it's breaking ball. Breaking ball is a finesse pitch. A slider is grip it and rip it pitch. It's mm-hmm. It's a kind of feel thing, whichever one you can throw the best.
All right, good. No, that's so I've often wondered that because, you know, I keep telling people, I remember the best pitcher Pedro Martinez is the best pitcher I've covered, but the best single act of pitching I've seen was when I was just started covering baseball, covering the Mets in spring training, saw Doc Gooden do a bullpen in spring training. That was a thing of beauty.
Pedro Martinez is the best changeup ever. You know, he would hold the changeup. You couldn't even see the ball because his fingers are so big. But why are we yelling and screaming about the guys in the bullpen? Kay, Barucci, Hatch, Merriweather, because they have fastball changeup combinations. Mm-hmm. They can throw them for strikes, and there's that much mile per hour difference that it's hard to time it up because you can't tell the difference between the two.
Barker, good stuff as always, my friend. We'll be back on Monday. Don't go anywhere, everybody. Writer's Block is next. Dan Shulman, Brian Anderson, Alvin Williams, Pete Dammel.